lights on. Can I get a hell yeah?
Yes, I am a pirate.
You have to go with the pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
It is a first down. Pirate.
Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. When you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it.
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
Whoever's at Omaha, I can promise you that.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for pirates.
You gave it away.
Welcome into the Holiday Extravaganza and Bowl Show, our Bowl special, baby. And as you see, if you're watching right now or archived, we are very festive, as thanks to Kyle for the graphic that I'm using in my background. Thanks to him. It looks like the Now Music or Christmas CDs.
Now that's what I call music.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Stevie. And so anyway, thanks to StreamYard for our overlays where they have the candy canes. And so I'm giving them credit where credit's due. I'm going to bring in the star. By the way, we've got a really big show tonight. I don't know how long it's going to go, but I will promise you that please, whatever you do, we have a special gift for you because it's the giving time, right, Matt? Oh. It's giving time, and Stevie and Johnny and Kyle, it's the giving season. So we've got a special present for you coming up at the end of the show. I don't know when that's going to be, but I will tell you that it's worth the wait. And let's bring in Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Happy, Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus to you, sir.
Merry Christmas, Dave, and Festivus for the rest of us. And to all my Jewish friends, happy Hanukkah. And to anybody celebrating Kwanzaa, happy Kwanzaa. And I don't know, is that all the holidays?
Happy New Year.
Yeah, well, that's coming later. But welcome into our bowl special / Christmas special. It's going to be a fun night. We're going to talk about the bowl game. And we're going to talk a lot about our favorite Christmas memories, from favorite Christmas movies to favorite Christmas songs to favorite Christmas presents, favorite Christmas foods. And then, of course, we're going to dive into the bowl game a little deeper and see if we can figure out a way the Pirates can somehow magically figure out a way to beat a really good Pitt team with a depleted roster.
All right, let's see. Our good friend Matt Semenza, former linebacker in the Logan years. How are you, my friend?
What's up, fellas? Really interesting weekend of football we just watched. I have a lot to talk about with what we saw this weekend in the playoffs so far. Obviously, very disappointing performances by Tulane and JMU. Really, you know, if you're a supporter of the G5, the so-called G5, however you want to put it, those games, that we could not have that happen. And I'm firmly believing that you're not going to see those games much longer. There's going to be some major changes on the horizon. And just really disappointed to see those teams just get blown out like that. And, you know, obviously we play a bowl game this week. Does it even feel like we play a bowl game this week? I mean,
no.
All the talk, guys, has been about Caton Hauser, JDB, our DC, Aldridge leaving. It's portal.
And he's not leaving.
I can't remember ever, Dave, a bowl game where I had this little excitement. So hopefully, you know, hopefully it's going to be a good game and somewhat entertaining. We'll see.
And by the way, guys, did you see Tim Beck is the defensive coordinator for South Florida? So Aldridge is not the DC at South Florida.
Really?
Yep. I'll send that to you guys in the.
So what is his title?
I don't know, but I'll send that to you.
That can't be right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm about to
reread that, Dave.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I mean, if you leave an ECU as a DC and go become like a linebackers coach. That's not even in the same conference. Right, in the same conference. I mean, but before we do that, let Dave, you go ahead and introduce the guys. We'll get back to it.
Yeah. So let me bring in, ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Stats Robertson. How are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. You know, it finally does feel like Christmas. Got a fire going in the wood stove. Got a little hot cider. And, you know, it's cold here. So it feels like Christmas. But, hey, we're supposed to get pretty good weather for the ball game. So I'm pretty excited about that. Like 57, 58.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about that because.
And I got Matt. I'm going to have to disagree with you on one of the two. Tulane did not show up, but I'm gonna drop your jaw with some facts about the JMU game. So we'll wait till we talk about that game.
Tim Beck is the offensive coordinator, Dave.
Okay, well, they had it wrong, and then all right, what I had the graphic. There's a graphic I have from South Florida that put.
Well, Stevie. From the great Lasker, home of the world famous Christmas parade in Lasker. How you doing?
If I was doing any better, Matt, I'd be Reva Shane at a Lewis family reunion.
Oh my Lord.
And Matt's like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't know what I'm talking about. Dave.
Guiding lights, CBS in the 1980s, 90s.
Reba Shane went through every Lewis man in the family, even the daddy and the two brothers.
So. She did. And then she was cloned. But
she got so good, she had to be two of her.
And I don't know if you saw the picture I made the other day of Stevie with Reba. So,
that was real, by the way, Matt. You saw that lady? Yeah.
Oh, you mean that wasn't real? Oh, man.
Yeah, it was real. She was here.
Okay. Yeah, me and Stevie found out that we both, growing up, watched The Guiding Light for some unknown reason. Stevie was much more into it than I thought I was a fan of The Guiding Light growing up, but Stevie was like an old lady watching it, apparently.
Let me tell you, I was in the summertime, well, all during the year, I was kept by my great aunt, and in the summer especially, you didn't bother her from 12:30 to 4 o'clock.
Yeah. And
my grandma was the same way.
My grandma
would watch Guiding Light three times a day and act like it was the first time she'd seen it every time.
Well, I'll tell you what's funny. I remember visiting my grandparents in college, and one time I went, it was during this time of year, like the holidays, and my grandmother said, let's see what Miss Chancellor is going to say. Like on the Young and the Restless, and it was like, okay, that means David, shut up right now. She's watching Young and the Restless. You only can talk, I guess, in the commercial breaks. So, what is your favorite? Does anybody have a favorite soap opera? I know Matt's going to join in.
I never watched them.
Baby's going to go with The Guiding Light.
I'm going to Guiding Light, definitely. Everybody wants to say Young.
I'm going to go Wrestling. With my grandmother's favorite, which was Secret Storm. I never actually watched it myself.
That's way back in the day.
Well, she's been dead for, you know, a couple, like 20 years, so.
Matt, do you have one? I got a feeling Matt wants to get off this topic.
General Hospital is mine.
I had a grandmother.
How about Search for Tomorrow? That was a big one, wasn't it?
What about you, Matt?
What were you saying, Matt? Your grandma.
I had a grandmother who would watch. She would watch MASH and then Fantasy Island.
Oh,
so not exactly opera. Like a soap opera, but like that's the closest I can come up with.
So you're not a fan. I thought Matt would be a fan of soap operas. Man, I'm just disappointed now.
I was too busy lifting weights and actually doing something with his life than all of us sitting back on the couch watching Reva Shane marry about 30 different guys.
Can I get a picture of Reva Shane? I got it.
You got it the other day. I sent you one of her and Stevie together.
Did you see that woman with me the other day?
I honestly don't know if I saw that. In all honesty, particularly the early 90s, she was showing her age. I never got it, even as a kid, and looking back, I still don't. As she wasn't that hot. Harley was the hot chick on Guiding Light, in my opinion.
Her sister at the time.
All my children.
Her sister back in the day was on there for a little while.
Roxy.
Roxy Shane. What a name. And boy, she was hot.
I'm going with Harley Davidson Cooper.
Welcome into the soap opera.
Welcome.
Objective.
Sponsored by Procter & Gamble. We got enough off-topic stuff for tonight with all the Christmas stuff. We'll revisit the soap opera talk. Join me and Stevie as we start our Guiding Light podcast in the near future.
Alan Biggs comment.
Figure number 38. Now you're on the Young and the Restless.
Yeah, but there's a
is
lot.
That still on? Is Young and the Restless
yeah,
still
Young
on?
Young and the Restless is yeah. still on.
One of the few still on.
Yeah, look, there's. Let's see, Young and the Restless.
My grandma. The only two times I've ever heard her cuss.
I'm sorry, Matt.
Was at Young and the Restless. She cussed Nikki, and then watching wrestling, she cussed Ric Flair, called him a son of a bitch.
Oh man, yeah. Let's see. The only ones that are left are. Is Days of Our Lives still on? That's on.
That's not on like regular TV. I think they're streaming on Peacock.
You have Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful, and General Hospital is about the only thing they left, right?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. So anyway,
Stevie, Young and the Restless, is Snapper still on there? Or is he?
Nah, he's been gone. You know who played Snapper? Gone.
No, I knew my sister had a crush on him, but who was it?
I think David Hasselhoff played Snapper one time.
You're right. Oh my God! Wow. You're right.
Okay.
Knight Rider, the Hulk. Yes.
Baywatch.
So Matt, let's talk about the playoff games from this past week.
Yeah.
Wasn't JR, I think you might have been about ready to finish a point on that. You said.
Oh, he said when we got, I was talking about stats.
Yeah, the JMU game. I feel like people are misguided about their comments a little bit.
Yeah,
I feel like Tulane embarrassed us, and I mean, it really, really hurt that they didn't really compete at all. Now,
I think the score at halftime of the Tulane game was not that bad, but they just came out the second half, and, they laid a head. They just act like they didn't know how to play football in the second half.
Yeah, the Oregon game, the score at halftime was very, very lopsided. It might have been 34-3. But
they came back.
Well, it wasn't just that they came back. They played well in the first half. They really did. And, Matt, here's some stats from that game. Nobody would believe this. Well, nobody would have believed
the final
score if I gave them these stats.
Yeah.
Okay, so JMU had the ball for 11 and a half minutes more. They had more first downs, 23-22. They had 84 snaps. The most snaps against Oregon in any game was 71. Indiana could only get up 69, and, you know, they go fast. But so JMU, the fact that they had 84 snaps means they had long drives, long sustained drives that they didn't finish. Total offensive yards, Oregon 514, JMU 509. JMU's the only team to score more than 30 points against Oregon. So I don't feel like JMU embarrassed us. I feel like Tulane laid an egg, but I feel like JMU went out there. They battled hard. They had a block punt for a touchdown. And all their touchdowns they gave up were 41, 45, 46, 56. That's what killed them. Big play, getting beat over the top. And I just feel like that game was – it could have been a lot closer, and JMU, they played really hard, and they shouldn't be hanging their heads at all. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely moved the ball well, like early in the game. They moved it between the 20s, but when they got down to the red zone, they just would stall out. And, they had some penalties down there. Kind of reminded us of ECU early in the season with the penalties in the red zone, but I think the issue was defensively, man. I mean, they just because they would have like a 7-minute drive and then they'd give up a 60-yard bomb over the top. So I thought it's funny though, like to your point, I had that game completely backwards. I was telling my father, I said, you know, I think JMU defensively, I think they're going to be very competitive. I said offensively, they're going to really struggle to move the ball. I felt like so, and it actually flipped over, they did move it. But defensively, man, they just got torched. I mean, it was just like – it looked like 7-on-7 at one point. Yeah. And it was tough. I mean, but, hey, you do – one thing I'll give them credit about is they did play hard in the second half. They didn't put their heads down. So you got to give them credit for that. But The whole time, fellas, Kyle, Dave, I'm thinking, I'm like, how the hell did JMU get here before we did? It just was like, the whole thing was infuriating to me.
How many, John, do you have how many total yards Oregon had in that game? Because I know one time.
I had 14, and James Madison had 509.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. I wanted to root against JMU to get there just because I didn't want them to get there before we did. And now they have a $4 million cash infusion. Well, actually $7 million accounting the $3 million expenses. But I had to root for them, and I was rooting hard for them, and it just, you know, it just wasn't going to work out. But yeah, I know what you're talking about with them getting there before us. I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like them getting there before us. But once they're there, you might as well pull for them.
Yep. 100.
And Tulane, I think Tulane's biggest problem is the style of football they play, or they did play, is not conducive to pulling off an upset in the playoff against somebody with significantly more talent. You gotta, when you're in one of these games, you know, the problem with these playoff games versus the bowl games is these teams that are more talented than you do care. Whereas in some of these bowl games in the past where teams would get into the BCS bowls, you know, Boise State, Memphis, et cetera, they were in situations sometimes where the other team didn't really care. Where it was a playoff game, so of course they care. It's hard to pull off upsets in those situations. You got to out-scheme people, and Tulane isn't built that way. They're built to win in the trenches, which is great for conference play or even non-conference when you're playing a Duke or a Northwestern. But when you're playing an SEC school, that's not going to work. JMU had a good showing for the most part. They didn't embarrass anybody. I think what's going to happen, I think we're going to see this step by step. I think initially you're going to see next year the language change in the contract where it's going to say the four power conference champions get in and then one champion from the group of six. You're going to officially see that language change. So I don't think they're going to take it away at first, but I do think we're hitting to 2 16 or 2014 playoffs, one for the Power Four, one for the group of six. But I think next year you're going to see the language in the contract change where we're only going to see one group of five team in there going forward. And I'm going to say this and bite my tongue saying it. In all honesty, with 12 teams, there probably should only be one group of five team in the or group of six team in the college football playoff. And it's their own fault for having that language that way. They should be mad at nobody but themselves. And they'll change the language in that contract. I don't think they'll take it away from us altogether, at least not initially. But you will never see two again.
No. Never.
Agreed with that, for sure. The Nick Sabans are already out there beating their chests.
Nick Saban can go suck a Yule log. I've never seen a more cocky, you know, I want Nick Saban to go tell them boys at Army, go tell them boys at Navy, go tell them boys at Air Force that they don't deserve. I want to have a chance to play in the college football playoff. Go tell them because that's what you're saying. Anytime you say, they talk about players' rights. Well, players have the rights to get paid and make millions of dollars. And players have the right to transfer at will. Well, don't those same sumbitch and players, whether they play at East Carolina or North Carolina, deserve the right to make the college football playoff? And again, specifically Saban and Feinbaum, you little pencil neck geek, and, you know, on down the line, go tell them boys for the academies, because that's what you're saying when you say that a group of five or a group of six representative don't deserve the play, shouldn't be in the playoffs. You're saying that our servicemen, no matter what they do, they don't deserve an opportunity to be in the college football playoff. I don't know why somebody doesn't take that approach when arguing for us.
I'll tell you, you know who was fantastic? I think – I don't know who sent it. Somebody sent a – it might have been Bubba. It was Doc Holliday, the broadcaster. Did you send that, Dave?
Yeah, I found it on X, and I thought that was excellent. Go ahead, Matt. Yeah,
we should post that on our group page because he was spot on. He brought it with that take, and it was a long take. That went on for several minutes, and he was defending the G4 or the G5 at all costs, and I thought that take was tremendous. But, you know, guys, like, let me ask you this question. Like, let's just think about this for a second. We know Texas Tech bought a roster this year. They went out and spent $55 million, right?
Yep.
What do we think? What do you guys think Oregon spent on their team this year?
Good gosh. Phil Knight? Phil Knight said it was unlimited as long as he was alive. So no telling what they spent.
No, that's not unlimited as long as he's alive. You know, they're going to have that.
Well, that's what he said before.
He'll be able to prove it, though, because he can have folks do commercials for Nike. So his may be able to get approved pretty easily. But what did Oregon spend? I don't know. 80 grand, 90 grand, or 90 grand, 80 to 90 million, I would guess. I'm just guessing. I heard Texas Tech had the most expensive roster in college football this year. So if that's the case, it's not as much as Texas Tech spent.
Yeah, I know they spent $55 million. Now, well, my question is: so we have Oregon, right? And let's just say it was $55 million. What do you guys think JMU spent on that roster?
Oh God, probably $1 million.
There you go. You're talking about a $54 million difference, roughly, give or take. We don't know exactly what Oregon spent, but I know Kyle loves that when I say
Oregon,
but. Think about that. I mean, you cannot.
Origami?
And when you just think about this weekend, it became very clear to me, like more than it ever has been, the divide between those top teams, those Oregons, you know what I'm saying? The divide is too much to overcome. It's now you might catch lightning in a bottle one day. All right. And I think Kyle, you summed it up really well where you said, in order for the G5 to compete, you're going to need some sort of a system in place that allows it, like tempo, you know, up-tempo, running a ton of plays, spreading the ball out to five different receivers. Like, you got to bring something to the table because you can't win on talent. You simply cannot do it.
No, you can't. Hey, what do you think about, though, Bob Chesney, if he did that with $1 million, now he's going to be at UCLA competing against, you know, Oregon and the rest of the Big Ten teams. You know, every year I'm rooting for UCLA just because I'm ambivalent towards them. I don't dislike them. I don't like them, but the other Big Ten teams, I don't care for at all. So I'm hoping he does well.
Matt's a Big Ten guy. We might have a little bit of a feud going here between Matt and Johnny. I'll be the special guest referee.
Well, yeah, I am an SEC guy, but not when they play. I mean, I root for them, but I don't root for them when they're playing. I hate their commissioner. Hate him. I'm a Roy Kramer guy. Back. That's what got me, you know, going with the SEC. I don't want to get into it though. But other than to say that, if a Group of Five team were to play any SEC team, I'm rooting for the Group of Five team every single time.
I hope.
Yeah.
I don't have a power league. I'm not an SEC guy or a Big Ten guy or an ACC guy or a Big 12 guy. I'm an East Carolina guy, which therefore makes me an American guy, which therefore makes me a Group of Six guy. If we're going to put labels on it, all the power conferences can also go suck on a U-Log.
I agree. But when you're talking about national champions, I just don't. I don't like Michigan and Ohio State, so that's why I root for the SEC. Just somebody beat them, please. That's why I do it.
I guess I'm pulling for Indiana this year to win the national championship.
I am too.
Well, Indiana, yeah, that is a great story. And Matt, to your point about the whole thing with Doc Holliday, the thing that drives me crazy about Nick Saban is the fact that this is what I would challenge Nick Saban. You say that you love college football. You talk, you know, you're getting paid millions of dollars on game day, right? So Indiana is a great story. If anybody beats one of the giants of college football, like Nick Saban's Alabama, that is a great story for college football. It may not be great for Alabama fans, and if I were an Alabama fan, I would get it. I understand that. But think about Cinderella stories. That's what's missing from college football. We need a Cinderella. Who is that Cinderella? And you may not call them Cinderellas this year, but Indiana is the team that I want to win so that the Nick Sabans and all the people that are talking heads and think they know more than everybody – that they'll have a little bit of humble pie.
Put Ethan's comment up there. There's several names that are being mentioned. You can go over to Hoist the Colors if you have a membership, IGO's board, and there's several names being mentioned. One is Memphis defensive coordinator. What is his name?
He expressed an interest.
Jordan Hankins has expressed interest in the job. There's some other names that came up. That one intrigues me. He did a pretty good job. Memphis' defense has been pretty good the last several years. He knows the league. You could have a North Texas OC and a Memphis DC. Roy Tesh, am I sold on him calling plays with Blake? Yeah, it doesn't scare me because I trust Blake. But that'll play itself out. I truly still, and I know a lot of people say this is a dress rehearsal for Roy. I truly believe if Roy was going to get the job, he'd get the job. You know, now if we go beat Pitt and hold them to like 17 points, then it may be his job. But unless something like that happens, I think we'll hire from the outside. But I do think the Memphis Hankins, the Memphis defensive coordinator, is an interesting name to come up. That would be a pretty good hire, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kyle. But I do think this is kind of an interview for Roy Tesh. I think he's a long shot, just like Blake was a long shot. But, Blake came through. Maybe he can too. But, yeah, this bowl game, Blake is going to be checking out what he does. And, it's either going to take him completely out of the equation or maybe keep him in the running. I'm not sure.
That's a tough introductory interview, guys. Are you talking about? Yeah. Number one, you're playing a good, solid Pitt team. And, and then you consider that we're not going to be playing a quarterback that has more than, six passes all year. So, if this turns out into a three-and-out fest for ECU, that puts a ton of pressure on your defense, man. That is a tough interview right there.
I would say
we're going to have to move the chains, guys.
Yeah, I would say that with Blake having Roy, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all because you have Roy Tesh, who is a really good developer. Look at what he's done with our defensive line. We had no guys really that people were talking about. There were guys that had experience, but he really did a good job with the defensive line. I think with Blake Harrell, I have no problem with the hire. Now, if Blake were not the coach, that would be a whole different ball game for me, but I don't have a problem with that. And what I would argue is just making sure that our linebackers is something that I don't know about you guys, but linebacker is something I'm worried about.
It could be a situation where, where if we bring in somebody from the outside, it could be a co-defensive coordinator type thing where Roy Tesh gets added responsibility, gets the title of co-DC, and just doesn't have play calling duties and maybe prepares himself to be the DC the next time it comes open. Because I do think you're going to have to give Roy something to keep him. I think he's got plenty of opportunities to go be a defensive line coach somewhere else. So I do think you're going to have to do something to keep him, even if it's just like a co-DC title with a raise.
Yeah, I like Kenny's comment. No one thought Blake would be our head coach, but he earned it, and Roy has been right there beside him. Kenny, I know that I know Kyle had mentioned it too, but back when Houston was coach, I had a good feeling about Blake even back then. Two or three years into Blake being here, I was like, he could be our head coach someday. Now, obviously, I didn't know it was going to happen the way all that turned out, the way it happened. I thought it'd be more or less like Houston would be successful, and then who would be our next coach? And I was, thinking that. But anyway, I really like I like Blake a lot. I don't think we're going to have a problem on defense. I'm concerned about our offense. By the way, guys, has there been any more guys that have declared to enter the portal? I know they can't officially do that as far as on paper, but have you guys heard anything else?
No,
just the three we know that are of impact. Yeah.
And you can't do it, right, Dave? You're right. Officially, you can't do it, but it's everybody knows who's interested and who's not. You can still declare and say, "Hey, I'm gonna enter it." And so far we haven't had any. Pitt's had a few more. Pitt has had some.
Pitt had a couple more, and they were key players. They're
key. They're very key players.
Was there a running back and a linebacker?
Yeah,
but the thing with the running back is, they have a true freshman running back, Tucker, who's putting up really good numbers. But the number two guy hasn't played since the Notre Dame game. I think he's got an ankle injury, and they don't think he's going to be ready. And then the number three guy, it just said he's going to the portal, Jules Goff. He's got five touchdowns. He's number three in rushing. Number two in rushing's hurt. And then they have no other running back other than the freshman that has more than 10 yards rushing. Yeah,
they're going to pass the ball nonstop, probably.
That's okay.
I'll tell you, it's going to be I'll tell you this, like the fact that we haven't had any more guys opt out for the bowl game is a really good sign to me because,
oh, yeah.
You know, what these agents are doing now is they're trying to influence these guys to opt out, telling them that by risking potential injury, your NIL deal, if you do enter the portal, is going to decrease. So, look, I'm thankful for that. I do still think we're going to see 5 to 7 guys at minimum hit the portal after the bowl game. You think back to last year, I think it was like the day after, we had a number of guys declare.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. So it's still going to happen. But the thing is, I think those are guys we have. Now that we do have more money this year, we can potentially keep them. The two that really concerned me the most.
Little.
And I'm not trying to stir anything up here, but, you know, look, it's what we're talking about. I do worry about our left tackle, yep. And I worry about our right guard.
Yeah.
You know, solid.
McCrimmon and Poku.
Poku and McCrimmon. Yeah, exactly. Those are two big ones. It's hard to replace those old linemen.
Are you saying after the bowl game, Matt, or are they going to do it this week?
No, I think now what you're seeing is the team that's going to be on the field. I'd be shocked if anybody opts out moving forward before the game. But I think I think in the 48 hours after – well, what day does the portal open? It opens the 1st.
January 2nd. Right? Yeah. January 2nd.
A week from Friday.
The 2nd. Okay. So I fully anticipate to see at least 5 to 10 guys hit the portal.
Yeah.
Let me ask
Matt. Okay, go ahead, Dave. But I was going to ask Matt a quick question. As a player, as an ex-player, isn't it unlikely that these guys are still practicing if they're going to opt out of the bowl game? Like, they would have opted out already. Wouldn't you think anyone that's still on the team?
Yeah, nobody's going to opt out this late. I would seriously doubt it. If you haven't opted out now, you're probably not going to opt out.
Yeah. I was worried about the Desario Riles, but he's still in camp, so that's a good thing.
I don't know why he would go anywhere. He set himself up to be the top tight end. He's going to get paid. I think he would be dumb to go somewhere.
Yeah. He's one that I'm not – I'll just say this. I'll be really shocked because, like you guys said, he's one that he's done very – and also he's really stepped up his game as far as, like, with the Pirates, with the offense, with JDB. Obviously, I know we have a new offensive coordinator, but I feel – he's not one. I'd say Riddle is the one that I'm concerned about, guys, the most as far as you talk about offense. But defensively, Matt, he's the guy that's like my number one guy that I've been watching, like hoping, like when I don't see opt-outs, when I don't see names, and I'm looking, please, no Riddle. No Riddle, please. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but he's one of my favorite players. So,
right. Yeah, I'm sure besides Hauser, I would think Riddle got probably the biggest paycheck. That we offered. So, you know, I don't know, you know, some of these guys may just be perfectly happy taking the money we're going to give them and, you know, like Riddle. So we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to go, you know, you're talking about 5 to 10 opt-outs after the bowl. In that, some of that could be guys that we want gone too. But, you know, at this point, you know, for guys that are legitimate starters, I could be wrong, but, you know, all those opt-outs we had after the bowl last year, those guys weren't really legit starters. You know, you had guys that had came in and
– just didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had guys who had played like – no, what's his name? Who got the interception to seal the game.
Matt's favorite player.
Yeah, who ended up
– Oh, what the heck's his name?
He ended up at, I think, Michigan State or somewhere and didn't play at all.
Yeah. Yeah, what's his name?
Who cares? But
Gibson, Kevin went to UNC. This was he was a corner.
He had the INT for the.
He came from UNC originally, right?
Didn't
he?
Start yeah. No,
and then he went to the locker room.
Trash the locker room.
Yeah, the game sealing INT. Nash. Not Gibson.
Nash.
Yes, Nash.
Dontavious.
Yeah, Dontavious Nash. Yeah, so. Guys like him who'd played, but like, you know, what's his name who went to Virginia Tech? He had already opted out. So I think, you know, I would think if Riddle was going to opt out, he would opt it out already. And some of these other, or excuse me, not opted out, but was going to enter the portal. I mean, things can change after the bowl. You may decide, hey, I do want to go play somewhere else, but
yeah,
we'll see. I don't know. This bowl game is depressing. I was excited about it at first. And even with JDB and Alder's gone, we thought Hauser was going to say I was still excited about it. And then you had all these other opt outs, and it's just not, you go from being a 4-point dog to a 10-point dog, and you know, the defense is going to have to carry the load. It's just, you know, you kind of almost wish you'd got the Birmingham Bowl and be playing Georgia Southern. But beating Pitt underhanded is a tall, tall task. I'll say it. I said it before and I'll say it again. In a vacuum or on an island, I think this would be one of the greatest wins in ECU history. I really do.
Yeah, I agree.
Because of the situation we're in.
Matt,
I had a I have a question for you, Matt, and I'll ask the other guys too, but starting with Matt. So I've heard, and I'm not knocking Kyle because he shares my concern. So I'm going to throw this one at you. We've heard how East Carolina can't win this game.
Uh-oh.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
He's frozen.
Dave is deep in thought.
Yeah. You know what he was going to ask is how can East Carolina win this game? And I, Matt, I have an idea of how we can win this game, but let's get your thoughts. That's what Dave wanted to do on how the Pirates can win this game.
All right. Well, I think like what you saw, like we talked about with JMU last night, they were able to move the ball 20-20. They couldn't finish in the red zone. When we get in the red zone in this game, we have got to finish. And it can't just be field goals. We have got to convert touchdowns in this game because – we're not going to have as many opportunities, I don't think, like hitting explosive plays down the field. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. The other thing is Mike Wright in particular. I'm assuming Mike Wright is the starter, so this comment is based off that. He's going to have to show early that he can complete passes because if we just try to line up and go read option, speed option, quarterback power, they're going to just load the box and it's going to be game over. So we got to establish him throwing the ball early to open up some lanes, especially in the running game, and get him moving. So I think those are just two really big things to look for offensively. Defensively, guys, my biggest concern is we're going to give up a lot of short fields if we don't move the ball. So I see like some punts, you know, if they get the ball at midfield, eventually your defense is going to wear down. So we got to move the chains and we got to score. And Mike Wright, or if it's Ditta, you got to throw that. You got to show early that you can compete and hit some passes.
Yeah, I think, and I commented on this Wednesday night. I think our best chances to win is Pitt being overconfident. I think if Pitt comes in there, they know what we have or the lack of what we have, and they come in and think it's just going to be a blowout, and they're just going through the motions. They don't have any depth at running game, and if we're able, you know, they have given up some negative plays. If we're able to just get after them on defense and they're not mentally focused and we can force some turnovers early, maybe we block a punt, maybe we just come out and we, you know, just can jump on them early by making some defensive plays, creating some turnovers, creating some negative plays, give Mike Wright a short field, and we're able to kind of jump on them. And, you know, maybe get up on them all of a sudden because they're just not mentally in it, 17-0, 21-0, because of a combination of gadget plays and they don't know what's coming from Mike Wright, and then our defense jumps on them. And then can we hang on because, you know, we won't be able to sustain it. So that's how I think, you know, our best chance of winning it is to create havoc on defense, get pressure on their quarterback, create some turnovers. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for us is if Pitt mentally isn't in the game. Sometimes, you know, you win a game not because of what you do, but because of what the other team doesn't do because they're just not mentally there. And I think that's going to be our best chance. We can't really control that. All we can control is our effort and intensity. I think we're going to have to win this on defense. And then another thing on defense is red zone, red zone, red zone. We've done that all year. We can give up big plays, but we're going to have to be stiff in the red zone, hold them to field goals. And any chance we have a chance to score, we have got to score. You know, you say you don't want to settle for field goals. I guess it depends on the score of the game. But, yeah, I go for it. I go for fourth downs on offense. I do whatever it takes. But I think our best chance to win this game is, again, Pitt not being focused because, A, it's East Carolina, and They're undermanned, don't have their quarterback, don't have their best receiver or one of their best receiver, don't have one of their best tight ends, don't have their coordinators. And Pitt just comes out and goes through the motions, and we come out on defense like a house of fire and cause some things to happen. I think that's going to be our best shot.
Yeah. Hey, to that, Matt.
Set the tone early.
Yeah. To Matt and Kyle's point about the red zone, here's some good news. Pitt's 119th in the red zone on defense. Like, they allow more red zone scores than, you know, everybody but 17 teams. And they give up a lot of touchdowns. They've given up 69.44% of the red zone scores are touchdowns. So, I mean, the opportunity is there. I mean, this is a good situation for us. They're not good on defense in the red zone. And you know, our red zone defense, we have to stop them in the red zone. And, you know, our defense is pretty much intact. And we're number 7 in the country in touchdowns allowed in the red zone and number 8 in percentage of scores in the red zone. So, I mean, I like those stats. You know, and passing defense, they're terrible. I don't know how much, you know, Kyle Lewis, the linebacker, you know, he gets a lot of pressure. He's a pressure dude. Him not being in there, and Jimmy Scott, the defensive lineman that's not going to play, this is the weirdest stat I've ever seen, ever, for a defensive lineman. He's been hurt pretty much all year, but he's played in like 9 games, but he can only play like a few plays a game. This guy has got 18 tackles on the year, but 4.5 sacks and 8 tackles for loss. That means when he's making a tackle, he's creating havoc, and he's not going to be available. So I like that, because we don't need that added element of some maniac that's just, you know, a bull that you just can't control him and he just wreaks havoc. We don't have to worry about that because he's not playing. And Kyle Lewis was preseason All-America at linebacker. He gets a lot of pressure. So him not playing, I just feel like we needed some breaks. There's a couple that I'll take, you know. I'll take those breaks right there.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Good point, Sergio. Hey, Axel is on fire tonight, man. Axel's ready to line up and play, I think.
I think Axel's a Ravens fan, too.
Hey, speaking of, not to get off college football here, but Keaton Mitchell, is he having a big night? I feel like somebody mentioned him earlier.
He's got a couple of runs, maybe like 4 or 5 yards. He hadn't broke any yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Hopefully, no offense to Keaton, but being a Steelers fan, I hope you don't.
Hey, really quick, just want to go back to something. You know, we talked a little bit about it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. I don't know exactly how NIL works, but talked about, like, why would a player like Riles potentially leave? He's going to get a big deal here, right? Well, correct me if I'm wrong. The state of Florida has no income tax, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Correct.
State income tax, yeah.
State income tax. So, you know, you see a lot of NBA players go down and play for, geez, Pat Riley's still a GM with the Miami Heat, but
yeah, you're giving a 20-year-old kid way too much credit, Matt.
I would think he has advisors, though, right? I mean,
you can be advised on a lot of things you still don't know shit about and it don't mean anything to you. I mean, I doubt he's worrying about state income tax credit. That's not going to be his decision.
Because for a big deal, like let's say you get a $700,000 offer. That's a lot. You're talking about a lot. Hey, I don't know. This is a little offshoot to that point. But so did you guys catch the Anthony Joshua, Jake Paul fight this weekend?
Oh, God.
Man, that was brutal.
Did you hear how much money he lost by knocking him out?
Do you realize Anthony Joshua made $70 million?
Wow.
Jake Paul made $120 million for getting his ass whipped.
But didn't he lose like $4 million by knocking him out?
He may have. And that fight, and the reason why I mention that is because that fight was in Miami. So I read an article today that Joshua's payout essentially got cut in half.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess because he doesn't live there. He doesn't live in the state of Florida. So he has to still pay certain taxes. But I don't want to turn this into a tax show. But you guys get my point. Is that you do make more money for living in Florida, but whatever.
So what about but you were talking about the handlers, I guess, of these players, but at the same time, I mean, speaking of Matt, here's another thing. You can also have people that don't have your best interest at heart. Mike Tyson and Don King.
None of them have their best interests at heart. These agents have one thing in mind.
Commission,
get the most money. And if your best interest is just financially speaking, then yes. But sometimes, look, you know, all right, let's say you have an opportunity to make $700,000 in Florida, but you had an opportunity to make $300,000 here. Well, the upside, you know, maybe to stay here, make $300,000 versus making $700,000, start every game versus being buried on the depth chart at Miami or wherever. So, you know, and having a shot to make the league, because you can't play in college for forever, although then eventually you might be able to. These agents ain't worth a tinker's damn, and they have nobody's best interest in mind but themselves. And at some point, some of this crap, you know, I think, and we're gonna, you know, we'll talk about the bowl a little more, and we'll move on to Christmas. But I think two things need to happen. Something me and Matt have talked about at nauseam is you need to go back to having to sit out a year to enter that transfer portal, you know. I think if you do that, that'll cut back on some of the transfers. And then the other thing is I would move – I think you got to either do one of two things. You've got to move the transfer portal post-spring, and that's the only time. Or if you're going to keep it where it is, you cannot enter the portal. You cannot opt out of your bowl game. You have to play in your postseason game unless you're injured.
I agree.
I think the only way you're really going to be able to enforce that, though, is to move the portal to post-spring. The only problem with that is, you know, guys leave post-spring, then the guys coming in to replace them. And that's another thing we probably need to address. With these players making all this money, at what point do we just say, all right, screw this. Everybody can practice as much as they want. Do we still have to limit practices? You know, so if they transfer post-spring, get them here in the summer, and you can practice all you want during the summer. I mean, it's getting to the point where there's so much money involved. One thing doesn't make sense with the other. It's like, oh, well, we're paying them $5 million a year, but they can only practice this. Well, shut the hell up. At this point, they're employees. Get your ass out there and work.
Exactly.
Matt, let me ask you this, though. You come from the era in the 90s. If I remember right, you were at two-a-days, right?
At three-a-days, Dave.
Three-a-days, wow.
Three-a-days. Now, like, I love talking about this, so if you don't mind, I'm going to just take a minute.
No, of course.
Like, I get so irritated now with how little you can practice, and it's, like, it's absurd to me. Like, I think you can only have, like, 3 two-a-days now. And I don't want to sound like some, like, old boomer or something. I don't want to sound like that, but – you know, here, I'll tell you guys, like this was our schedule under Steve Logan. We had 2 weeks of three-a-days, all right, with a weight room session in between. And in between all that stuff, you had film room. So you would get there around 6 a.m. and you would get home probably at like 7, 8 o'clock at night. And let me tell you, man, there's no heat. I don't have to tell you guys. In my opinion, there's no heat like Eastern North Carolina heat. And 3 days, man, that is no joke. And it wasn't a joke. Like, I can remember seeing guys lose 16 pounds in one day. And that is not an exaggeration. That is the truth. So it's just so different now. And I guess, Kyle, you were making the point, right? I mean, your point was that just you should be able to coach your program the way you want and not be beholden to the NCAA. Is that what you're saying?
As far as the amount of practices, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just let them go. If you move that transfer portal to post-spring to save postseason.
That would be unfair, though.
Don't limit the amount of practices. That way, if you bring in a guy post-spring, you can go ahead and put him to work if they can learn the offense or defense.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, were you taking a bite of chicken parm there?
I was eating a pecan, actually.
Not a pecan, a pecan.
It's pecan. Stevie.
Pecan.
Stevie, so for me, what about, you know, having similar, since everything is going NFL anyway with college football, I mean, would you have like the workouts, like for rookie workouts, you know, have workouts for in the springtime? Like what I'm saying is post-spring football, so hear me out, that what to add to Kyle's point, would you have it where you NCAA wants to have their hands in something, so you say, okay, we're going to have workouts for these guys, we're going to work out these guys. Guys are coming from the transfer portal. They can practice X amount of time. But to me, I've never had a problem with, I'm from the old school like Matt. I think that you're, I think with football, and I'm not a football player, Matt is. So, and Stevie, you can help me being the head coach. I believe that the more in tune you are to the program as far as plays is important. But just as important, you need to be in tremendous shape. I know I'm stating the obvious, but guys like Matt, I mean, they were like monsters because I believe they were in great shape. I know that they say they want to protect the players, but to me, I don't see how you can say you're protecting the players when you're not letting them play the game and getting used to that physicality and the cardio, and I'm sorry speaking out of turn, but I just feel like that the players would be in better shape in every way, as far as the plays, as far as the physicality and the strength and conditioning, the whole nine yards.
Not just that. Familiarity with each other. One of the first years I coached, you know, having them out there in the weight room in the summertime together. And one guy said, well, I can just lift weights at home. No, that's not the point. Yeah, it's nice that you're going to do that at home, but come out here and get familiar with your teammates. You don't just, you know, one of the best teams I had, they came out here on their own. They came out in the summertime on their own, not days when we didn't have workouts. They came out on their own and ran plays. And come first day of football practice, we were ahead. We were ahead of the game because they already knew the system. They were in good shape. And we had, you know, we were state champion runner-up that year. So, I mean, it wasn't a coincidence that when you get them out there that early and come, like, August 1st is the first day we can have an official practice. So, workouts in the summertime, they did that on their own. And then come August 1st, it was like a cakewalk. So, I didn't have to spend a whole lot of time with them saying, you're out of shape. You know, they were in good shape. So, yeah, getting them out there to do that, do all the reps, getting in shape during the off season, yeah, that's big.
Well, yeah, and you work with your strength coach a lot. But my thought is more if you move that portal to post-spring, it'll say postseason, and if you don't limit practice time after that during the summer where the coaches can work with them, then you can, you know, when you bring those guys in post-spring, you can go ahead and put them to work. I'm trying to think of to save postseason football, because at this point, the postseason is a disaster.
Well, I think bowls will be gone in a couple of years, guys.
I agree. I think we're going to have a 2-playoff system, one for the group of five, one for the power four, but we'll group of six. But we'll see. That's down the road.
Like I told you guys, I think that what we should do is, I think we should find, I've mentioned this twice before, now the third time, but I think we should look at merging with another conference and taking the best teams from each conference to make a super conference. And then, Kyle, wouldn't you be able to, you guys help me out.
There's no guarantees, but, you know, if you took, you know, the eight in the Pac-12 and merged some of the eight best from the American, you could certainly make an argument at that point that that's a power league, and you could certainly make an argument at that point that even if it doesn't get power status, that if they, you know, initially change it, which is I think what they're going to do initially is change the language to one group of six champion, at that point we'd be back to the group of five because you merged the American and the Pac-12 at least. The point is, even if it was still one representative, the champion of that conference would get it every year. How would it not?
Right. That's and also, Matt, there was talk of guys, there was talk about, I saw like an article, I can't remember if it was Sports Illustrated or wherever, but taking, they were saying that basically Conference USA and the Sun Belt should merge to try to do the same thing to help.
That's not going to, no. The only thing, Conference USA, look, Liberty will be back up because they're going to start spending a lot of money. Besides that, you know, Jacksonville State's a decent program, but what, Missouri, Delaware, I mean, Middle Tennessee, no, they're not going to do it. Conference USA overall is DOA, and the same with the MAC. That the Conference USA is not going to help the Sun Belt.
But don't you
think? I get what you're saying, consolidation. The league, less leagues, less. Yes, I get from that aspect. I get it, but essentially, it's still the same amount of teams.
I know. I think what we need to do is separate ourselves, and in every single way, meaning conference wise, meaning how much money we're giving our players, the whole nine yards, so we do have a chance to compete, because we're not much different right now, guys, than some of these teams in the Power Four that are just.
Well, and that's the problem. It ain't Oregon. It ain't Alabama. Right. It ain't LSU. It's not Michigan. It's that what pisses me off is that East Carolina and Memphis and Boise are sitting there and we're considered lesser than NC State and Wake Forest and Rutgers and Baylor and, Iowa State. And I know they've been good in recent years, but these lower tier Power Four schools, and yeah, a lot of them are rising too because of money. But that's what pisses me off is when you hear, well, NC State's a power school. And I'm just using them as an example because they're the obvious one for East Carolina fans. Give me a friggin' break.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's what pisses me off about that.
Let me tell you, this is going to infuriate you. So I do listen to sports radio a lot in like New Jersey and New York. And listening to a sports radio station this morning, and they, one of the broadcasters was talking about, Rutgers, and Rutgers would do probably better than, Tulane and JMU. And, it's unfair that, a Rutgers, and I'm thinking to myself, look, God, I wanted to call. I never really call those things, but I wanted to call. I wanted to say, look, you have, number one, you have Big Ten money. All right. And we know that this comes down to buying a roster. And Rutgers, like, if you're a Rutgers fan, do you know how lucky you got to get into the Big Ten? You didn't earn it.
Nope.
You were never a good program. You got in for the sole reason that you're, in terms of proximity to New York City, one of the largest, if not the largest market, TV market in the country. That's why you got in. You got lucky to get into the Big Ten. It wasn't because you were some great performer in other conferences and you just worked your way up the ladder. Nope. You got lucky. So like, I hate hearing from some of these schools about, oh, we could do better than Tulane and JMU. Maybe
do better.
Do better then. You know
exactly.
What?
Exactly.
It's just everybody's got their own narrative.
Point out, by the way, Tulane, despite their performance, beat Northwestern out of the Big Ten, and they beat the ACC champion.
Duke.
They beat the ACC champion on the football field. So, shut the hell up with the Rutgers.
Hey, Matt, here's another one for you. How about Maryland? Maryland was an ACC school.
Nah, but they've got a tradition, though. Maryland has a much richer tradition than Rutgers does. They have a national championship in basketball not that too long ago.
No,
yeah, but not football.
But football, if you take away Ralph Region, they really haven't done much in the last.
Okay.
Is that one guy, the one that hired Scotty Montgomery, still their head coach?
I think he just got let go this year.
Finally. God almighty.
I think he got let go.
You want to
look? No, are you talking about I can't think
came
of his name.
Alabama.
Yeah. He's still there. No, he's still there.
Jesus Christ.
He's absolutely still there.
What point are they going to fire him?
Hey, give East Carolina, give us Big Ten money for a few years.
No doubt.
Give us Big 12 money.
Yeah. Hey, we'll be even. I mean, we were good this year, and we'll be even that much better.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of money, though, you know, JMU got $4 million for being in the playoff. $3 million expenses. They get to keep the $3 million. $4 million. I'm sure they have to split with Sunbelt in some way. But do you think these Big Sky teams they're actually pretty darn good? You know, Montana State, Montana, all those teams, North Dakota State, South Dakota. I wouldn't be surprised if they joined the Mountain West just because they see what kind of money can be generated by just, you know, making it to the playoffs.
There's been some conversations.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. But here's the funny thing. JMU, Kyle, how long have they – what? This is their fifth year, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and in 1972, I mean, it's not really that long ago, they lost to the Shepherd JV team 6-0. So, I mean, it just shows you JMU is on like a meteoric –
JMU just came back to reality, and their AD retired, who was a coach whisperer, and now they just hired Billy Napier, and they'll be fine. But the days of dominating and going to playoffs and having special seasons, I got a feeling they're over. Get ready for some 8-4s and some 9-3s and some 7-5s, and you know, so I got a feeling JMU's about to meet reality. And when you've had a string of success, what you've been doing, and I know it's a different AD, but what you've been doing is hiring these FCS head coaches and bringing them in, and they've been working. Why would you change that formula? Why would you get away from what's been working and what's been from Mike Houston to homie at Indiana?
Yeah, Kirk Cignetti. Why would you not use him as an advisor? Pay him. Okay, you're retired. Yeah, you're retired. But hey, how about you help us out with our?
Yes, use them as a fire, and you know the formula. Go look who's right. The best. Hire the Mercer head coach like Toledo did, or you know something like that. It's just it's the formula that's been working. Don't change it. But I got a feeling JMU's about to meet reality. I don't think Napier's going to do a horrible job there, but I think you know it'll be.
Well, they'll have some money to spend too, but yeah, you're right, Kyle. I don't think they're going to be normal good. Yeah.
So, guys, y'all want to talk Christmas? We've been going for an hour, and this is our Christmas.
Hey, can I close with one more thing about football before we go?
No.
Ah, damn it.
No. We won't let you do that, Johnny.
No.
Okay, here we go. When Caton entered the portal, I don't think he really had an idea of how many quarterbacks he was going to be competing with. This is going berserk mode. Like, there are so many quarterbacks, and a lot of them are shockers. Bo Prabula at Missouri, Josh Hoover at TCU, Sam Leavitt at Arizona State. I mean, there's at least Aiden Childs, who was the guy that was starting in front of Caton at Michigan State. He's in the portal. There's at least 12 guys that are probably thought of in higher regard than Caton Hauser.
Well, Caton could always just change his mind.
I know.
I wish he would go and do it now so he could play in the bowl game.
That's where I'm heading, Kyle. But, you know, I initially, Dave, I told you, you asked me, where do you think Caton might end up? I said, well, I think Indiana would be a good fit. At this point, Indiana's off the freaking discussion table because there's just so many quarterbacks that would get more money than him. I don't know. I just don't know where he's going to end up. But I don't think he planned on this happening. That's my closing statement on football.
Well, that's Florida.
I'm sorry, Dave. We talked to exactly. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you that very thing, Matt. Is that you've made the point? I was giving you credit because you've made the point so many times that speaking of guys getting bad advice, you know. Yeah, you have the right to leave a school, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be picked up. So you have a
– Oh, he'll be picked up, but I don't think he's going to make the money. Well, that's he'll make more money than he's going to make here, but I don't think he's going to get – maybe he'll get the $3 or $4 million he wanted, you know, but I think he's going to probably be more around that $2 million range. which, you know, is that worth it? Because we were offering him 1.2 to 1.5, depending on who you believe.
Yeah. I don't think he gets $2 million at this point.
I imagine he gets $2 million. Wow. I think pretty much any experienced quarterback going to a Power Four school is going to get $2 million. But I don't know. Like I say, Caden, you can always is it too late to play in the bowl game? Could he decide tonight? Could he be listening to this podcast?
You know what? A good plan B would be, excuse me, is Drew Mestermaker. Just okay. We're going to pay you stupid money, and come be with your OC. And he already knows, you know, the rich tradition of East Carolina.
Yeah, so, he's going to Okie State.
I don't think he is.
Yeah, I have a question for all of you. And Stevie, chime in too. All right, if you knew that you could get a quarterback, like, you know, we're talking about that there's a lot of, you know, big quarterbacks out there. Would you pay, like, ridiculous? Like, I mean, I know 1.5 is ridiculous for East Carolina. Is there a number that you would say, if we could get so-and-so?
I think we would have offered Hauser more if we were going to pay more. So I think we can only offer so much because we got other positions that need filled.
That's the thing. It's just like in the NFL. You look at, especially right now, the Dallas Cowboys. They paid Dak all that money, and you gave CeeDee Lamb a bunch of money. You got so much money wrapped up in two players, and you're going to be like $38 million in
the cap.
Over cap space. Ooh. You don't have any cap space. $38 million over.
Over
and
the cap?
You spend it. Yes. And you spend it on two players mainly.
So, I knew that they had overspent on those two players, but I didn't know the amount they were over the cap.
You look at the stuff around you, you know, they've got definite needs around them, and they don't have the money to pay them for. So that's just like here. I'm not going to go out and pay an insane amount of money for a quarterback if I don't have it and neglect my other positions there. I'd rather have, you know, so let's say you pay an insane amount of money for a quarterback and your wide receiver room is
don't have an O-line to block for him.
Exactly. You don't have the offensive line to block. What good is that quarterback?
You do what Ruff did at Texas Tech. You do wide splits on the offensive line and you get rid of the ball quick. But no, that
that's
I was just going to say
no,
we're not going to be doing that. But as far as Jordan Davis goes, I mean, there's a lot to be said that Mestermaker had ridiculous numbers. I mean, Chandler Morris was good. Chandler Rogers was good.
Why don't you think he's going to go to Oklahoma State?
Well, I mean, because he has – I mean, I'm not saying he's not going. I'm just saying I don't think it's – you're saying why won't he follow the head coach? I'm saying why won't he follow his OC?
And he's also got his quarterback's coach who's now the OC at Oklahoma State.
Oh, that's okay. I mean let me dream, Kyle. Anyhow,
you can dream all you want.
I'm just talking about what Jordan Davis has done. I mean,
the numbers I've seen Mestermaker and rumored gets around $4 million. It ain't happening.
Well, here's my point.
I don't think he's getting that much.
We've got to be to put ourselves, Matt, in a position. You know, I was talking about this for every single year. I was talking to one of my mentor. And we're going to have him on the show at some point to be like a guest host. It'll be fun. But anyway, that's a whole other show, as they say. But for me, we're going to have to raise, and the fans think I'm crazy, $20 million a year, every year. If not, we're not going to be able to compete at the level that we expect to compete at. It's not that Dave is delusional, Dave is crazy, all that. That's what, you know, the amount we need every single year. And to Kyle's point, he said before, at what point are we going to have the fans fatigue? Because, you know, we have Pirates Unite right now. You have season tickets right now. You have NIL. You have, obviously, the Pirate Club, the actual fund itself that you have to. There's four buckets of money right now if you're a Pirate fan that you potentially, like myself, that I'm giving to. So at what point, you know, does it break? But if we're going to be serious about football – we're going to have to raise that amount every single year, or we're going to have to drop down a level. I've heard some fans say that. It's true. We're going to have to drop down to FCS.
Oh, we're not going to have to drop down to FCS.
Dave,
you blow the comment there when you say that. I mean, God almighty. You look at the schools in the MAC and Conference USA and the Sun Belt. They can't touch half of what we're doing. We're going to drop the FCS.
Well, I just want to know how much we have to spend this year. I mean,
no kidding, Matt.
I think the administration is making a fundamental mistake here. And I know there's other thoughts on that, why you wouldn't want that number public. But I think for me, the positive benefits outweigh the negative. And I care less.
I guarantee the positive benefits outweigh the negative, Matt. Now, here's why. Because if we offer you $100,000 and these some bitches offer you $300,000, then them knowing how much we can offer you is not going to make a difference. I mean, it's so stupid. If I'm offering you as an individual more money than the other place is, then what does it matter if you know what our budget is? What the hell does it matter? I guarantee you we know this. Florida's got more money than us. Now, does South Florida have more money than us? Yes. How much more? Who knows? But what does it matter? If they want one of our players and they can offer him more than what we can offer him, it's so stupid. When you really break it down, people are overthinking something that is so simple. If I know we have $8 million and South Florida example. South Florida's got $16 million. What does it matter if we have 8 or 12? South Florida knows they have more money than us. They know they have more money to offer our players than us. So us actually having that number public, you know what they could do is release a rough. If they don't want to release an exact number, they could say, we don't want to release the exact number, but on the low side we have $8 million, on the high side we have $13 million. It's somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. And our goal is $20 million, so we need to keep raising. So they could do something
like
that.
You're agreeing with me, right?
Yeah, initially I didn't know, but yeah, he's agreeing.
I'm agreeing with you 100%.
Yeah, he's agreeing.
You sound like I can't think of his name. Stevie, help me out. The old man Darlin on Andy Griffith when Barney.
Oh, yeah.
Is he with me or he again me? No, he's agreeing with you. But yeah, I'm agreeing with you. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I must have
got lost in translation in my rant there.
It's a good rant. I thought it was a really good rant. And I
got you riled up.
I'm fine with a range. If you want to do a range like that, I'm fine with it.
Let's let this man. All right, Matt.
We've heard some people say we have, all right, I'll just give it. I've heard people say we have 4 million. And then on the other side, I've heard people say we have 11. I'm guessing somewhere in the middle, Stevie. I mean, what do you think? I don't know.
I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you what it is. The truth is we probably have 11 million for all sports.
That's correct.
But so if it's true, 70 to 80% goes to football, do the math. What's the low end? What's 70% of 11 million, JR?
Oh boy. 7.7 million, I would say.
Good Lord.
Alexa, what's 70% of 11 million?
7.7 million is what I'm going to guess. I don't know.
I love how Alexa is like Kyle's personal assistant.
You got it exactly right, JR.
I'm good.
I'm
good with numbers.
He's Johnny Stats. What do you expect from him?
I know. I expect him to be a banker or go count cards or something.
I know. No doubt. Definitely time for Wattner. I'm wasting my talents.
No.
Definitely time for Wattner.
No, but Matt, let me ask you this. So, like,
bam, 99X, the future of rock and roll.
Matt, let's say that we have the number that I'm talking about, the $20 million. Let's say that finally the administration and really encourages our fan base to give and give and give and give, like rev share, right? We have the $20 million in the Athletics Excellence Fund and the purple, what is it? Kyle, the Purple Gold
Society. Purple and Gold Society.
Yeah, where you give, this is Matt Semenza money. What you do is you say 25 grand, you get 5 grand a year for 5 years. That's the entry level for the Purple Gold Society. But If you have the, let's say hypothetically, I have the $20 million. You are the general manager, Matt. I'm gonna make you general manager for the Pirates, and you have the $20 million. How much would you offer a quarterback? We need the quarterback. We need the quarterback. I'm not saying, don't misunderstand me, I'm not saying spend everything you have on the quarterback and you have nothing left for the team, because that's the ultimate disaster.
If you have $20 million, then I would go as high as $4 to $5 million on a quarterback.
Now you see where I'm going
is that we're going to have that number, because we saw after 2023 how important it is to have a quarterback. We've talked about, not that that's the only position on the field, but it starts with that. But what do you guys think?
Well, we need it, but we don't have it right now. So we're talking about something we don't have right now, so there's no point in talking about it.
Well, I will say this, though, Kyle. In this offense, quarterback's a little bit more important than it might be in other offenses.
I agree, and I disagree. I think this is an easy offense to be quarterback in. But it is important to have a good one. There's plenty of good ones out there. Western Carolina's Mercer's quarterback. There's plenty of good ones from the FCS level we can get. I think we'll be fine. I think you can get a damn good quarterback between $1 million and $2 million. I think we'll be just fine, and we just need to make the right choice.
What do you think, Stevie?
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. I mean, I'm like Kyle, we can find a quarterback easy. And just like JR said, how many quarterbacks do you think are in the portal right now, JR?
I've counted 18, but like, the lower level ones, they're not even announcing because they know nobody cares. I want to say they don't care, but the only people really announcing are the higher level quarterbacks. So I would say there's 18 higher level quarterbacks. So there's probably 30 quarterbacks that are probably intending on entering the portal right now. And that number's going to grow, definitely.
And how many schools actually need a quarterback?
I mean, everybody needs a quarterback. Texas doesn't need one, obviously. It depends on who's going to go where, you know, that's the thing.
Of the group of five, and I'd love to get on our Christmas topics eventually.
We have to do that.
Well, I mean, we're just repeating the same shit we've been repeating for weeks.
Let's move on then. At the group of five level,
with the offense we run and the numbers that our offense put up and the numbers that North Texas offense put up and the system that's going to be ran here, I would think of the group of five quarterback positions that are available in the portal, and you know you're going to come here and you're going to start because we don't have a starter. I think our position will be very desired. I think a lot of FCS, the top FCS quarterbacks will be looking at us. I think we're going to have the opportunity to get some backups of some Power Four schools. I think there's some G5 guys that we would definitely have a chance to get. I think we'll be fine. My guess is we'll bring in. If I had to guess, if you put a gun in my head, I think we will bring in I'd like us to bring in a solidified FCS starter that would put up big numbers. If not, then I would bring in a couple of Power Five backups and maybe the UTEP quarterback who put up decent numbers in limited starts, played a similar system. He had no talent around him, but I really like that Western Carolina quarterback. He's somebody that I've heard maybe he might get a Power Four opportunity, but I don't think so. Look at all the other guys in the portal.
Yeah, and I forgot about a bunch of guys that are in there. I mean, there's no shortage. Notre Dame's backup quarterback is getting a lot of interest. Georgia Tech's backup quarterback, Aaron Filo, he's getting a lot of interest. He's probably going to go to Florida, I would imagine, to be with Buster Faulkner, but Dylan Rayola at Nebraska, it's Sorsby at Cincinnati. It's like crazy how many quarterbacks are in the portal.
Yeah, I bet we could do a whole show, I'm sure, on like, and Matt, maybe we can do that in January after the season's done. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that would be definitely, for not next Sunday because that'll be reviewing the bowl game, but for the following Sunday,
right?
Looking at breaking down portal quarterback possibility, because that's what we'll really be getting into that point, because we'll be signing one by the 17th.
Hey, Matt, I want to ask you a quick question with the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Rocco Becht, he's in there. He's in the portal. You're a Penn State guy. You think you want him? How could you not?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You'd take him over Bo Prabula, wouldn't you?
Wait, which name? Who's the other one?
Bo Prabula played at Penn State. Then he went to Missouri. Because Drew Aller was the starter, so Prabula wanted to play. He went to Missouri. Now Prabula's in the portal, but so is
From what I hear, JR, and I from what I who knows what I hear. I don't even pretend to be some kind of insider or somebody, you know. But like from what I hear, it's a done deal.
Oh, with Rocco Becht?
Yeah.
Great fit, I think. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He's tough. He's a gritty player. I mean, I think he'll do well there.
All right. Are we going to – we're going to go ahead now to – we're going to find out how Kyle saved the bowl game, but we'll find that out after the bowl game. He'll tell us all that, his secret sauce. So Kyle saved the bowl game. We'll find out about that. But in the meantime, we're going to transfer now. We're going to shift gears to how Ernest saved Christmas. We'll have the we've got that coming up. Our definitely our staff film critic Matt Semenza is going to tell us about how much he loved, or maybe not so much, Ernest Saved Christmas. We have our five top Christmas songs, our five top movies, your traditions. We have a and at the end of the show, this is the giving time of year. I'm a giving person. I know Matt is, Stevie and Johnny. We have a something special, a gift for our listeners, and we'll do that at the very end of the show. So I'm really excited about that.
1 year membership of the Jelly of the Month Club.
Hey, Dave, just I also have, although it's very short, I have an Ernest Saves Christmas review as well, because I did follow through.
All right, well, let's start it here. Let's go ahead and start.
JR. Yeah, JR, you kick it off, and then I can steal it.
Well,
we're assuming that the same people that are listening to the last few episodes, okay? So let's tell the story of why we're reviewing Ernest Saves Christmas. All right, so Ernest Saves Christmas is one of my top five Christmas movies of all time. Matt thinks that's hysterical. He's never seen it. JR apparently has never seen it. Matt always gives me crap about it. So they both decided to watch Ernest Saves Christmas because, you know, they want to see... Matt finalist had it as one of the worst Christmas movies of all time, which is
Rotten Tomatoes had it up there. That's what
Rotten Tomatoes can kiss my rotten ass.
kiss your rotten ass.
That's why we're they're reviewing Ernest Saves Christmas. So all right, JR, go ahead with your thoughts.
All right, this one's a short one, but I'll be honest. I figured I'm going to check out the first 10 minutes and. I might bail out and not watch the rest if I think that it's just completely ridiculous. So after 10 minutes, I said, hey, you know what? It's definitely not deserving to be in the worst Christmas movies of all time list. And I've seen enough that's interesting that I'm going to stick with it for a while. So I watched the whole thing. And, there were a lot of bowl games on while I'm watching this thing, and it dawned on me that Ernest Saves Christmas was better viewing than most of the bowl games were, to be completely honest with you.
Hopefully the NCAA is listening.
And that is the truth. I mean, normally there's 0% chance I'm watching Ernest instead of a bowl game, but I did because it was more interesting. So, I said, well, okay, so I'm going to say that Ernest is like the Independence Bowl of college football.
You're full of crap. If you think Ernest is the worst Christmas movie ever, then that means you genuinely love Hallmark movies. Okay, you're saying Hallmark Christmas movies are better than that. But go ahead, JR.
It reminded me of the Independence Bowl. It's not glamorous, not heavily marketed. Production-wise, it's modest at best. The plot's pretty straightforward, and the star power, pretty much very regional. This movie didn't have a lot of stars in it, and normally the Independence Bowl, there's nobody in there that's going to win the Heisman Trophy, and in Ernest Saves Christmas, nobody's winning the, Golden Globe or whatever you want to say. So I felt like, the Independence Bowl is not one that I circle on the calendar that I have to watch, But I'm, you know, normally I check it out because it's intriguing. And Ernest is like a good Sun Belt or Conference USA 7-5 team that they show up prepared. They run the same plays they always run. You know, they keep it close with sheer effort, you know, and heart. And you know, like Barney, I feel like his comedic style, if you will, is kind of like the triple option of Christmas comedy. It's simple, it's repetitive, but I mean, surprisingly, it's effective. I kept watching it, and there were some completely ridiculous attempts at special effects. The sleigh thing.
1988.
I know, but they went too far with some of the stuff. But you know what? There was enough big plays that I was like, okay, I'm going to keep watching. And I did enjoy it. I'm trying to put into words what exactly I enjoyed about it the most. I felt like I loved the Santa. He was an excellent choice. That guy made me feel like Christmas. Right. You know, he was really good. There was a lot of in the opening, Kyle, the opening to the movie. Just the credits and the old Coca-Cola ads and the vintage Santa Clauses and Christmas scenes. It got me stirred up right from the start, just from the introduction. And then the movie, I felt like it was definitely putting me in the Christmas spirit.
Kenny also doesn't like Pee-wee Big Adventure. I always liked Kenny Carlin. Thought he was
raw with you. Pee-wee Big Adventure.
Exactly.
Pee-wee's right. Big Adventure is one of the best movies ever.
But that's not a Christmas movie.
No, it's yeah, not.
Kenny was comparing Ernest to Pee-wee.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay. So, in closing, I will say that I did enjoy it. I don't understand why Santa got arrested. Can you clear that up for me, Kyle? I'm not sure what the charges were. Why was he in jail?
It was, well, that's a good question. Actually, and that's a bit of, it could be for passing counterfeit funds. Because he did give Ernest
Monopoly money.
Yeah, big and money. He refused to say who he was. I think he was more being held to try to identify him. But the genius of Ernest P. Worrell playing the assistant to the governor with Harmony Starr, a.k.a. Pamela, playing the governor's niece, was just, you know, utter genius. It's just genius. It's the genius of Ernest.
I agree. And then the other thing I didn't understand was when he had Santa Claus in the pickup with him, the Ford F-150, which that was pretty cool just watching that thing. I remember when there were a lot of them on the road. Anyhow, he went in the back of the – Santa was going in the back of the truck. And he said, no, don't do that. And then there were like still – there were snakes back there. And then and one of the pictures, like he had snakes coming out of his face and stuff. That lost me too. I'm not sure what happened.
You missed a key little scene. So when he's going into the horror movie set, he's got the poison snakes, which is just nothing but stuff underneath a thing. And
yeah, right. There were no snakes.
All right. So Ernest is standing beside the truck while Santa is in the movie studio, and people come by with the actual poison snakes for the horror movie. And they go, hey, you're the snake handler? And he goes, yeah. And they dump all the poison snakes in the back of the truck.
I missed that somehow.
Yes. And so, yeah, that's what that is. And he says, no, you better ride up here with me. And they go dump the snakes. So, yes, you missed that brief little scene. It's literally about a 45-minute scene, and you just happen to miss it.
Okay. And then I'm going to close with some stats. Some Ernest Saves Christmas stats.
JR, okay. You should be like, you know, like the next Siskel, the next Gene Siskel.
Please, I'm not deserving of those accolades. Anyhow, Harmony, who I thought was a very good choice.
No, her real name, by the way, I believe is Noelle, oddly enough.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, I'm just referring to her.
She was fantastic. She's a very good
actress. I thought she was. She helped make the movie.
I don't know what happened to her the rest of her career, but she was excellent in that movie.
Yeah, she was. And here's my stat for her. She was born on Christmas Day. She was born on Christmas Day. Come on.
Interesting.
Christmas Day.
Yeah, she was. She was born in 71. The movie was 88.
So, she was 17. I don't know how she was as a person, but she comes across, even when she's kind of snotty at times, she comes across as very likable in the movie.
Oh, I thought so, too. The interesting, like, jewelry in the hair, too. I'd never seen anyone pull that off before.
Yeah, but if you thought about this aspect of it, Ernest, you know, just takes the 17-year-old girl home with him, and she's sleeping in his house, and then he has to dress up.
No red flags.
And then he has to dress up in a schoolgirl outfit.
Oh, God.
Okay, yeah. I get you, Kyle. I was thinking about that, too. Okay, so the other facts for that movie is
there's a line, by the way, when they're in the prison, and I don't know if you call it this, JR, but so Ernest goes in and he's playing the governor's assistant, and Harmony Starr is playing the governor's niece in this situation, and he looks over at the sheriff and looks it back at the niece and goes, "This is a pet project for Governor Jenkins, if you know what I mean."
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah,
a little innuendo-ish, but
and then I will just unfortunately, 2025 was a very rough year on the cast of Ernest Saves Christmas. We lost Chuck and Bobby, the two.
Oh God, yeah, from
the freight handlers for the aircraft. Yeah,
they're
we lost both of them. And we lost Thisbe, the one of the elves. Patty, I think her name was Patty Maloney.
Yeah,
you're an angry little elf.
Yeah, so all three of them, you know, we lost all of them this season. So there's very few members of that cast even still among us. One of them is the girl that played Harmony. She's still thriving.
We knew Kevin had good taste. All right, JR, by the way, that above and beyond with the going on the cast members, finding out they passed away this year, JR goes above and beyond with the information. JR is a facts person. Very nicely done, JR. I give your reviews two thumbs up.
Very nicely done.
Thank you, Kyle. I respect that.
I'm dying to know. I've been waiting all week because Matt Semenzo, for two or three years now, we're like, you know, he's like, Ernest Saves Christmas. And so I'm dying to know, Matt, I'm going to give you the floor. How was Ernest Saves Christmas? Take it away, bro.
All right. Thank you for that introduction, Dave. So first of all, let me just say, Kenny Curling is coming in hot with just destroying Ernest. I mean, that was fun. We're gonna need strong opinions tonight, especially when we get into worst Christmas songs of all time. So, Kenny and Kevin and everybody else, keep the opinions coming. 2025, you mentioned really quick before I get into Ernest. You know, it was another movie related. I was watching the original Terminator yesterday. The original. Do you know what year in the future that takes place?
2025.
Yeah, he's John. Yeah. He's John Connor's father.
John Connor. Where's John Connor?
Yeah.
So anyway,
Connor.
That makes you feel old, right? But all right, Ernest. All right. So, you know, here's the thing, right? I am not above a good B-rated comedy, and that's kind of where I see this movie. Like, I'll watch B-rated horror movies all day long, comedies. Is it like a classic great movie? No, but it's the type of movie where, like, if I was just hanging around tonight, if it was on TNT or AMC and it was on, I would watch it again. So it is entertaining. I think Varney does a very good job. I also thought about, like, some of the things in that movie, like if you tried to pull it off in, you know, current times, you know, they wouldn't allow that anymore in Hollywood, which was kind of interesting to watch. But
what parts are you talking about?
Like with how he basically brings the, you know, the girl in to live into his house.
Yeah, and then dresses her up in a schoolgirl outfit and all the
Yeah, like it's just funny. But that was like in the '80s, like all that stuff was like so, you know, you think back to like the movie 16 Candles and, you know, that stuff was like just the things in some of those movies you just couldn't pull off anymore. But
Blazing Saddles.
Oh, Blazing Saddles.
I'll give you another really good example. I think you couldn't do it in movies anymore or wouldn't do it in movies anymore. We'll come back to it. But finish your review of Ernest Saves Christmas.
So, I'll sum it up with this. It was way better than I expected. I did enjoy it. Had some funny parts. Like I said, if it was on like TV and I was just at home, I would probably watch it again. But I think you nailed it, Kyle. one of the reasons why we like Christmas movies, it's the ones that we watched when we were kids.
Highs of nostalgia, yes.
Right, so it's like a nostalgia thing. So you watched it a lot when you were a kid, so I get it. So, you know, for you, it's like...
Think about watching that movie at 8 years old, 9 years old, with, like, how hysterically you would have laughed at, like, Ernest backing up in traffic, you know, when he goes to get the Christmas tree and, you know, stay calm, Tannenbaum, and, you know, he's backing the car up and just little stuff like that. Or, you know, when the box falls on the skinny guy of the Bob. Two guys handling freight, you know.
Bob, I think.
Bob, yeah. So just stuff like that. Yeah, you're, but go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, so all together, you know, all in all, way better than I thought. Far from being miles from being the worst, like we saw on that list. And Varney was funny, definitely some funny parts. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I would say it's a good, it's a solid, like B rate. Is that the right word? B rate.
Yeah.
Movie, which I enjoy those kind of movies. I love serious movies too, but I'll watch those all day long. So it was good. Altogether, it was good.
Now I'm going to tell you guys about something. I want you to watch it again. Watch the movie and think of Looney Tunes cartoons and Ernest being a cartoon. Watch the faces he makes. Watch the slapstick he does. Think about, like, the box falling on Bob, the little skinny guy, and then he's stuck to the back of the box. That's classic Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote stuff. Think about the faces Ernest makes, like, when he goes, stuff like that. It's very slapstick. When he goes to Vern's house and he destroys Vern's house, he's like the Tasmanian devil going in there. Go back and watch it and think of Looney Tunes and think of Ernest being a human cartoon, and I think you guys will appreciate it even more.
Good point, Kyle, but I'm not watching it twice. I watched it once. I liked it.
It never gets old. It always stays new.
Hey, did he kill the guy? Did Ernest actually kill the guy that he picked up in the taxi when he backed up for the Christmas tree?
No, he didn't kill the guy.
He was still living? Okay, it looked like he was like, maybe rigor mortis.
He was zombified. He was scared.
Matt, we're starting an Ernest podcast very soon.
Hey, final thought. One thing that I thought was cool. They did a nice little thing at the end. I don't know if I've seen this in other Christmas movies, but essentially, like, the whole point was the Santa Claus was, like, prepping. He was, like, ready to retire. He was getting older.
Right, yes.
Trying to find a new set. So a nice little twist at the end was they hook him up.
With Mary.
So
now he retires. He's got a nice little girlfriend. You know, good for Santa Claus.
Great pickup, Matt. Great.
Does anybody remember Santa Claus's name in that movie? His real name.
Kyle, I wrote it down, but it's downstairs. I can run down there and get it. But yes, thank you. I wrote it down because I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah, okay. Chris Kringle, Seth Applegate.
All right.
Yeah.
So great.
Well, yeah, so I'm glad you guys both enjoyed Ernest. I told you would. And Ernest Saves Christmas is in my top five. And I understand why it's not in everybody's, but everybody can grow up watching it.
Okay. Now, Kyle, you did not watch Trading Places, though, correct?
No, I watched Mean Girls instead.
Oh, my God. God, you got to be kidding me. Trading Places is one of the best movies from the 1980s, hands down. Absolutely.
No doubt. When Santa pulls that loaf of bread out of his beard. Remember that?
What about the fish?
Oh, yeah.
Is Trading Places a Christmas movie?
Well, not technically, but it takes place at Christmas time. So right, it's enough Christmas content to make you get in the spirit.
Well, I'm going to say one line, and this makes this next movie a Christmas movie. Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
That would be Die Hard, Homie Towers.
Yeah, there's a big debate about that one.
Wait for Kyle.
Die Hard is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's not a Christmas movie.
Not Christmas.
It's not a Christmas movie.
That's the category like we talked about. It takes place around the holidays, but it's not a holiday. But it's not a Christmas movie. Who wants to start first? We have for people joining us. We've been teasing this for at least a week or more of the top Christmas songs, your top five and your top five holiday movies, Christmas movies, and I'm going to surprise you on my Christmas songs. I won't surprise you on my movies, but
You're asking somebody to start.
You want to start with? Can we start with worst? Worst?
Yeah, five? I thought we'd go worst.
Yeah, go worst. Yeah, that's fine.
Stevie, you've been kind of quiet. You want to kick it off?
Yeah, I'm going to go back in the 80s. Worst Christmas song.
Shut the hell up, Stevie.
What?
You're going to go with Christmas rap.
No, I'm not going to go with that song. I'm not going to go with that song. Yet. This is even worse, believe it or not. New Kids on the Block, Have a Funky, Funky Christmas.
I know what you're talking about.
We can all agree on that. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Get that out of here. Yeah.
Have a Funky, Funky Christmas. Yeah. I know Matt was probably a New Kids on the Block fan back in the day.
Yeah, I could tell. He's Dutch Fitz's.
Hey, weren't they around you, though, Matt? Were they from Boston, I think.
I think they were from Boston. I don't know. Yeah, but that song is horrendous. Is that your top?
You want me to name the other one?
That's one of his top Christmas songs, Matt.
Yeah, what's another one you hate, Stevie?
The Waitress's song.
Rapping by the Waitress's an awesome song.
Kyle likes that.
It's just a woman talking.
I love that song. That's one of my favorites.
It's just a woman talking. I just went and went to the store, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, God, no.
Merry Christmas. But I think I'll miss this one this year. It's a great song. It's very 80s, so catchy. Love it.
Horrible.
Stevie. Song because it's my favorite holiday. It's a great song.
All right, go ahead, Stevie.
Oh, I just said it. That Waitress's song, whatever the name of it.
Merry Christmas rapping. Christmas rapping.
Yeah, that's it. Ugh.
I love that song they did non-Christmas, which was I Know What Boys Like. I Know What Boys
Like.
Yeah,
I hated
that song,
same,
too.
Same vibe. I like it too, Dave.
Yeah.
Gosh,
it's called New Wave, Stevie. It's New Wave.
I was not New Wave then. I was old wave.
Microwave.
Idle Wave.
All right, do you want to do your worst movies or...
Do I want...
So.